Hello, folks. Welcome to On.net. I'm Kendra Havens, and I have a great panel here today to discuss becoming a developer and the challenges associated with it if said developer has disabilities. So I have Dante Gagné here. I'll let you introduce yourself.
Yes. My name is Dante Gagné. I'm a program manager on the XAML Windows team, so on Visual Studio. We generally work with the WPF and Universal Windows, but lately I've been working on accessibility for Visual Studio and kind of working on trying to bring, try to fill some of the gaps that have caused people who use assistive technologies to have problems here and there.
Yes, and Mitch, you want to
give
your spiel?
I'm Mitch Minster. I'm a Microsoft and Xamarin MVP, but kind of why I'm here is I also have autism, dyslexia, ADHD. So for me, you know, there's been interesting challenges getting started as a developer and being able to get this far, especially in the Visual Studio Dev Tech category.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So Dante, we've had a lot of changes happening with Visual Studio and accessibility and all our Visual Studio family and our tools. Do you want to talk about our bugs?
Sure. So accessibility has always been one of the cornerstones of the Microsoft products. But at the beginning of 2016, Satya really took a good look at, you know, how we were doing with accessibility. And one of the questions he asked was, you know, do we know how good our accessibility really is? So with that, a new group was, multiple new groups, but the one I work with is specifically for Cloud and Enterprise, CNE, where we created a group that's specifically dedicated to bringing the accessibility into Visual Studio, making sure we meet the goals. Mm-hmm. And with that, we started working with some third-party contractors who are trained in the Trusted Tester Program, which is a program by the U.S. Homeland Security to specify what is accessibility.
Yeah.
And over the last 8 months or so, we've had them testing Visual Studio, taking every bit of UI with a fine-tooth comb and finding any kinds of issues that may cause somebody who uses assistive technologies, you know, like screen readers, refreshable braille displays, and try to find those little thousand cuts that have been impacting our customers. And every team inside Visual Studio, as well as VSTS, VS Code, pretty much anywhere in the Visual Studio family, we've been really cleaning up a lot of those issues. And with the update 3, which is coming out fairly shortly, our customers are going to get to see a lot of those, and we're really hoping that the quality of accessibility is going to be improved with this version of Visual Studio. And once that's out and we're getting the feedback and we're seeing how we're doing things, we're starting a second round where we're going to be getting folks who have disabilities into the Visual Studio usability labs. And literally going to have blind developers sit down and try to connect an Azure web service or try to publish an app to the store. And then the developers and program managers on those teams are going to be able to review that footage, talk to the developers directly, and find out how to move from just being accessible to being usable. And that's a phase, that one's going to take a little bit more time, but I'm really excited to see kind of a renewal of this dedication to accessibility.
Yeah.
We've got new programs and training for program managers to learn how to design for accessibility.
Which I definitely need to take.
Me too. I've been working with accessibility now for 5 or 6 years, and I'm still learning new things. There are a lot of things that, you know, the books can explain how to get your automation properties right, but until you see a visually impaired user sit down with the debugger, you really only have some idea of where those gaps are.
It's a completely different experience.
Precisely.
When you actually see them using our tools.
But at the same time, it's also very empowering to see, there was a video that was being passed around of a quadriplegic developer who was developing C# code with Visual Studio with only a head-mounted pointing device and an air tube that he would puff into that would be the equivalent of a mouse click. There are people doing amazing things with disabilities. Don't hold people back, mm-hmm, unless we've got gaps in the technology. And that's where we're really putting down and making sure we want everything to be clean. We don't want as many of the, well, you can work around that, or, you know, you just have to remember the second tab stop after this is the one. We want it to be a welcoming environment for folks. And that's really what the next update of Visual Studio is about.
Totally. Speaking of the tools that we're introducing to Visual Studio that make it easier, and the headset, I guess, that the paraplegic person is using. Do you want to show us the the Dial and how it's being used?
Yeah, so the Surface Dial, for people you don't know, it was actually, they originally designed it for the Surface Studios that came out.
Changing colors.
Yeah, changing colors for your art palettes. You know, it'll stick on the screen if you have just the right angle. But what someone on the VS team, Mads Christensen, did was he saw the potential to actually bring this in the Visual Studio. So here I have a project open that I'm working on. And it's great because, you know, I'm not going to use a mouse, and I can press and hold just like the Dial, and now I can start to navigate around. So, you know, I can have scroll, zoom, navigation, and of course I got the update. So there's different ones, and of course I got the wrong one, so I'm just going to open the code. Helps to actually practice this ahead of time.
No problem. I haven't been able to actually geek out and see the Dial being used a lot in Visual Studio.
So let's just say that here we're in this. So you find your way to get your mouse in there. Let's do debug. So I can actually, and Xamlos is probably going to crash on me, but I can actually place breakpoints with a Dial in my code. Wow. Or in this case here, now it builds the bug. And what's going to happen is, after this debug for the editor, now I can actually jump between breakpoints just by switching the Dial.
Wow.
And bookmarks, you can do the same thing. You can also, they have different commands of with the tapping to delete the breakpoints as well. But the other thing too is if, you know, with this, the nice thing with the Dial too is it's so easy to turn. I mean, I can, you hear it kind of clicking. I can turn it with my elbow, but if you don't have that, let's say you're working late here one night and it's really cold and your hands are kind of like, you know, that it's harder to kind of move your hands sometimes, like happens to me because I'm just sitting and all of a sudden it's like, oh, yeah, I need to move. You can even turn it with little pressure, or, you know, if you have a lot, you can still, you know, how it does that. Now I've placed a bookmark. It's definitely not foolproof, but I'm finding little things like that are ways to help. There's also a really great add-on that I use within Visual Studio for spell checking.
Ooh.
Because with being dyslexic, I think I typed this, but then I find out I switched words, or I typed something completely different, or I even missed something that I thought I typed. So, which, you know, it's not going to catch if I miss a word in a comment, but if I misspell something, or if I know that this function is spelled wrong, it needs to be like this. The tools built in right now, even with Visual Studio plus that spell checker, helps me make sure that I have spelling correct code. Because that's a really big thing, you know.
Yeah,
when managers look at that is, can this person spell? Well, yes, I can. It's just sometimes something else happens.
Yeah, and I thought it was just for, you know, lazy people who couldn't get it right to begin with. But that's really incredible.
And it's interesting because from the Visual Studio side, if a program manager said, hey, what if we added a spell checker to Visual Studio? A lot of people, like, do you know how many words in C# really aren't English words? But, you know, when we're talking about cognitive disabilities and things like that, there are places where it would be really useful. And that cultural shift of, well, I don't think a lot of people would use that is starting to be, well, you know, there are people who could get a lot of use out of it, and we're starting to make that change. Mm-hmm. A lot of the work we've done so far focuses more on the blind, focuses on motion impaired, focuses on things like that. Cognitive disabilities is ones that we're really exploring now because we want to make sure that, you know, those disabilities are just as important as low vision or anything like that. We don't want to leave those folks out as well. But that's one that's taking us a little bit longer to learn because it's kind of new territory for us. But it's definitely one that's important to us. I mean, I have ADD myself, and it's one of those areas that I'd love to try some of the features that we're doing for that just to see how much better it can make my experience as well. Mm-hmm. So it's definitely an area we're investing in.
Great. What kind of experience, what kind of tools are we doing to specifically make the experience for people with ADD better?
Right now, we're one of the things, so I've spoken with Mitch several times before, and we're looking to get more people who have disabilities like that in for usability studies.
Oh, I
but
see.
For instance,
we're in a research phase, or?
We're still in a research phase with that, but things that we can do is, you know, for ADD, reducing distractions is very important. So, ways to quickly get into a mode where it's just your code or the debugging. I love the debugger, I think it's amazingly powerful, but there are a ton of windows, and finding ways to keep your focus where it needs to be without mm-hmm. other things changing, being distracting.
Yeah.
Again, it's a lot. We've got a lot of hypotheses. We've got a lot of things we want to test, but we're definitely in the research phase, but it's an area that we are investing into. We are researching into it, mm-hmm. and hopefully soon we'll have something better.
And
so,
yeah.
Actually, sorry, here's an example on that that we talked about. So have you heard about the Fluent fonts that Microsoft came out with?
You just mentioned it earlier,
yes.
But tell me more.
So one of the things is Microsoft, they released a font pack which anyone can download. You can put it on your phone, Mac, Windows. And it's great because it was designed for dyslexic people. It removes crowding and word spacing. And one of the extra things is, you know, so right now in my Visual Studio, you see I have the default system font Consolas, which, you know, it's readable, but, you know, we're in a nice controlled lighting studio. You know, when I'm my workspace at home, dark mode doesn't always work. Light mode mm-hmm. doesn't always work. And this too, Consolas doesn't work. And even your different, like you have to kind of keep this mix and match, which I'm glad Visual Studio saves your presets when you move and re-sign in. But actually, I played around with it. I'm like, well, how could that font help me as a coder?
Mm-hmm.
Right? It's free. I have to do nothing. I don't even have to say, hey, can you guys add this in a future version? So let's actually take a look. So let's go. I have the Fluent Calibri.
Wow.
So I can see why some people may not like this because there's limited screen space,
yeah,
and there's so much screen.
Space,
but I can read everything. I don't have to go, what's that? And squint. Mm-hmm. And I have actually found that I miss words less, where I don't need that spell checker as much because of that, because of how it does the line spacing and breaking. And you can actually see here the little purple squiggly we have for that const is, it thinks it's a spelling error. So, you know, it obviously it's not because I commented out some code in there, but that's an example of that. Oh, maybe I spelled that wrong, or I meant to say something else, continue, but I was thinking constant. So that's what came out.
Yeah, that does look really cool. What was I going to say? I didn't think of a font actually in respacing the words as being much easier to see, and sort of limiting the way your brain has to focus and concentrate to read what is there. It sounds like a great help. So, Mitch, you've been working on a couple of projects, I think, to help developers get started. Do you want to talk a little bit about those?
A little bit. Unfortunately, they're still kind of in the works because one of the things I'm doing is, you know, especially going through it, Xamarin, because that's where I started in, that's where my knowledge is. But, you know, it's hard sometimes to find mentors in the community, and that's a really big thing for me because of, you know, the contextual, you may know the term, Dante, cognitive dissonance.
Yes.
The mental cost of parsing through documentations is actually right now so much for me and other people where it's a big investment for me just to read documentation.
Sure.
Which having a mentor is, I can say what's in my head and kind of explain it, and that the mentor then can be that translator for me. But mm-hmm. right, we're busy, you know, the people I had for Xamarin were mentors who, you know, they're all now part of Microsoft and they're all now in higher roles, so I can't, you know, they don't have the time.
They got busy.
Well, but it's not their, you know, I don't blame them, they still try to help me, so. But one of the things I'm working on is really, I'm not comfortable yet doing live coding, but I'm working on an app that kind of solves multiple functions, which actually this demo code is. So the first one is it's a health app. You know, we have MyFitnessPal, we have a couple of ones out there, but you know, there's a lot more into that you can do. And I think we mentioned that last time I was on the show, how, you know, understanding what this means with your body, you know, that is that feeling of, you know, kind of flightlessness, is that because I'm excited? Is that because I'm nervous? You know.
Mm-hmm.
There may be the same thing, or, you know, what about your body? You know, what did I eat that's different? What did my meds do? There's a great walkthrough about, you know, having that spoon theory and your spoons throughout the day, and what is this going to cost me if this happens or this changes? So it's a great way to do that. The other part is taking this app.
What's the spoon theory there?
Oh, so spoon theory is basically, it's not just for neurodiversity, but it's also for like when people are sick with more debilitating illnesses, cancer, things like that, how you have, you know, you might have like in the cafeteria, right? You have that tray with spoons, right? That's going to be your spoons for the day, or what you can do, right?
Oh, okay.
So I get up, right? My choice was to get up. When my alarm went off, maybe I had a good sleep, maybe I didn't. That spoon cost is going to be different. Mm-hmm. And that's just getting up. And that might be one spoon, it might be two spoons, it might be more.
Okay.
Depending on that person.
So it's the way of talking about like your limits of brain space.
Yes.
And okay, interesting for the day. Yeah. I call it brain space all the time when I'm like, Rich, like my boss, like I can't focus on this again. It's like too late, or I have something else on my plate or something like that. Interesting.
Yeah, so that all ties in.
I interrupted.
It's okay. It's a good question. I should have probably defined that ahead of time, but it's all interesting to see too, because when you fix the issues of that cognitive cost, whether it's, you know, going through making Visual Studio less busy, easier to see, easier to read, that makes the cognitive cost less. So it makes it easier for everyone to start using it. You bring that into the docs, you bring that into other aspects, right? You know, I think it's really cool that, you know, Channel 9 now has closed captioning. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, that's even great because now the cognitive cost for me maybe is less because I'm trying to listen to what they say, but maybe I can't process the words, or someone has a little bit of an accent that I can't understand, but I can read the text. So I can now process it, and maybe I might get more out of that video. So there's lots of cool stuff like that.
Yeah, and I feel like it can, definitely help everyone. I almost wish we had like a chat bot in our docs now for what you were describing, that sort of the role that your mentors did, and sort of like asking, will you sort of like describe your situation and it will redirect you to different parts of where you need to go? Because sometimes if people are questioning something in Visual Studio, but they're really like on 2015 instead of 2017, it won't always direct them to the right place. And you can only describe so much in a search engine. It'd be nice if it was more interactive, which is what humans have done so much for so long. Interesting.
I would not be surprised to see if we have something from like the AIs from the Halo universe, but with the HoloLens, and to see where that goes, because we have everything there. That, you know, we have the HoloLens, we have machine learning, we have all this stuff in place. We just have to, you know, I don't know what all limitations out there, because I haven't fully been able to do research, but there's enough there that we can start putting these pieces together for things like that.
Yeah.
As long as, you know, it's not the first iteration of the chatbot Microsoft tried.
Right. Oh, boy.
You had to bring that up. But it's an interesting idea. I'm rolling through a lot of thoughts in my mind. I certainly don't want to be the one to suggest Clippy for Visual Studio.
No.
But a place where you can...
just saying our docs.
Yeah.
Like a little chat screen that pops up
like that. Hey, Cortana, can you help me write a private function that inherits from another class? You know, having that actually do the right thing, and Cortana can say, oh, you've got VS 2017 open, let me give you, oh, you're working with C#, let me go to the, there's a lot of things that if we could get the integration right.
Wow.
None of these are cast in stone, these are just me thinking off the top of my head, but these are spaces where Mitch is right. We've got all the pieces. Can we put them together? I almost wish Hackathon was next week instead of just past it, but
month?
Yeah, I've got some folks I need to bounce some ideas off of.
Yeah, that sounds absolutely great. Yeah, it's so cool working in this industry that we get to put these pieces together all the time and that they exist and reassembling them. But I wanted to ask, meeting some accessibility goals, you were saying Scott Guthrie actually took some really actionable.
Yeah, so recently, I mean, accessibility with Visual Studio has always been one of the tenets, which has been kind of, we have a list of things that we need to make sure we're secure, we need to make sure we respect privacy and things like that, and accessibility was on the list. But recently, accessibility was moved up to a pillar, which means it has its own time that we specifically report to Scott as far as what we're doing in Visual Studio, the accessibility work that we've done. And I've been hearing that he's taking a much stronger response, where a team was getting close to GA, or general availability, and Scott blocked them because they didn't have a good assessment of what their accessibility testing was. Mm-hmm. we're not saying the tool was or was not accessible, but they didn't know. They hadn't gone through testing to really validate where they were. So
it was actually a blocking.
Exactly.
Bug.
Our That's leadership incredible. Has taken a much stronger stance on accessibility. Not that it wasn't a goal in the past, but it wasn't taken as seriously from the perspective of resources that we had available to our developers. With the push that we've been doing for the last 8 months, I've seen a lot more questions from a lot more developers dealing with very specific details like, you know, how do we change the sorting on a grid view from the keyboard? How do we expose whether or not a control is collapsible for a WinForms control that uses a different automation API set? Getting a little bit technical there, but I'm seeing a lot of developers dive deeper into the details of accessibility, which is going to result in better compatibility with screen readers, with refreshable displays, with the assistive technologies that we work with. So it's really kind of moved the investment level up with this version of Visual Studio, as well as moving forward to the future of Visual Studio 2017 and V.Next when such a thing comes out.
So Visual Studio and Visual Studio Code, the whole family have is very based around an ecosystem where people write extensions that plug into our tools and everything. Now, are we doing anything to sort of ensure that those extensions that are also inside of this workflow can creep towards the accessibility?
That's a great question, because on one side, the extensibility model of Visual Studio is one that we're taking a look at to make sure that if somebody writes something that isn't accessible, it's not because of limitations in the extensibility model. We want to make sure that if somebody wants to write an accessible extension, say that one a few times fast, if they want to write it, the platform's not getting in the way.
Yeah.
As far as extensions that people write and share, which we definitely want to encourage, right now we don't have any kind of, if you want to write an extension, you have to be accessible. I could conceive of something like that in the future, but there's always going to be a line between, if you want to write a useful extension, it's up to you to decide whether or not you make it accessible. You make it accessible, more people can use it, more feedback, the better your tool gets. If you're just trying to get something out, that's entirely up to you for the third party. But as far as we're concerned, Microsoft, we want to make sure that we're accessible, people who make apps with us are accessible, and people who want to make extensions have the ability to make something accessible.
That makes a lot of sense, because there is a really big balance between sort of the challenge of innovating and making something new, but realizing that it's not perfect even when you're trying to ship it. Like, we already have enough of
them. Exactly. Another thing that, when I was saying brought up, another area we're investing with Visual Studio is in tools built into Visual Studio to help you make accessible apps. Like, for instance, if you're working with a WPF or a XAML app, while the app is running, the live property editor that we introduced when you're working with XAML apps will now show you the automation properties. So you can see all of the properties that are exposed to the screen reader. So if the screen reader isn't saying the wrong thing, you have the ability in Visual Studio with no additional plugins to be able to query what are the properties that they're seeing. It's not as complete as we'd like, but it is a big step towards exposing some of those accessibility properties. I know that there's a tool that a team is working on to, if you've got a running app or running web page or something like that, it will scan it and say, hey, you got a control over here that doesn't have a name, or you've got a combo box here that isn't exposing the correct properties. There are a lot of things that a machine can scan for in the accessibility scope that we're building and introducing tools over time that will allow us to make it so that as you're coding, we can point out when you've got a class not found. We can point out when you're referencing a variable that you haven't initialized. Our goal is to be able to point out, hey, you've got a control here that doesn't have the automation properties set up. A user with a screen reader will not be able to use your control at all. And that's a little bit longer lead, but it's another area where we're investing, because we want not just Visual Studio to be accessible, we want Windows to be accessible. And we want the apps that our customers are making to be accessible, so that without trying to put a lot more investment into it than you already are, what you produce will be useful for everybody. And that's kind of our grail. That's kind of the long distance, but it's something we're definitely working towards, and it's something we're investing in.
Yeah, and it sounds more likely that if we make these things accessible to developers, then the end user who also have similar needs and have get better service when something's written a certain way are going to be able to benefit from that as well.
Precisely.
It's kind of a treeing out effect. That's pretty cool. Well, did we go over some of the projects that you wanted to highlight? Did you have any more?
A little bit, I guess. If I was writing an extension today, and I wanted to do the accessibility, and I wanted to try to make it accessible, or is there any guidelines I could follow, or something out there? You know, like if I wanted to start and I want to, you know, go and develop for Xbox, they have a great section about being accessible, but making sure that here's some guidelines you can follow to make sure your Xbox, whether it's an app, a game, can be accessible. Is there something that I can follow as an extension developer? Or that we could get you later and throw up on the link?
That's an excellent question. If there isn't, there absolutely should be.
Yeah.
So I will see if I can find an answer to that, and we'll try to make that available with the video. But if there's not, there absolutely needs to be. And realistically, that needs to take an even step further back to if I'm writing an app, if I'm writing something for Windows, whether it's a web page, an app, an extension, whatever you want it to be, we need to make sure we have the guidelines and the documentation out there to make it accessible. Right now, sure, if you really get bored, you can grab the Section 508 documentation from the government of this is what it means to be accessible, but even that is, okay, well, I know I need to have a name. How do I do that in WPF?
Yeah.
I know this needs to expose the is collapsible pattern. How do I do that in Universal?
I'm sure there's quite a bridge to gap.
Exactly. And you know, if we don't have that documentation right now, or whatever we have up there, it could probably use another layer of polish.
Yeah.
It could probably use it once going over. Mm-hmm. And like I said, as part of this push with Visual Studio, we've learned new tricks. And you know, there have been a few cases where we've gone back to Windows and said, you know, we've got a small gap in this particular control, and Windows has fixed that gap for us, and those will be available with the Vault Creators update. So as part of the Visual Studio drive, we've even found places where Windows could be more accessible, and they've taken that feedback. They're definitely partnering with us. They want Windows to be as accessible as possible. Mm-hmm. When we found something, they've responded and made the platform that everything's built on that much more accessible.
Do we have an accessibility section on docs.microsoft.com that's like open source that people can update or contribute to?
I don't think so, but I think that's a great idea. I think it's a great, you know what?
Yeah.
That's something I need to look into.
Yeah.
It could very well be
hidden inside of each IDE and each, like, we have accessibility docs for Visual Studio and VS Code, but like it's not all
right
in one place.
Well, one of the things, so for instance, there's going to be a new area that you can access in Visual Studio. I don't remember exactly where they decided to put it, but it's going to be more top level, which will give you common useful keyboard shortcuts in Visual Studio. So the blind user, they can go to this screen and they can get a list of, you want to jump around bookmarks? Here's the shortcut for you. You want to shift between panes? Here are the shortcuts. So we're trying to expose and make those things more discoverable to folks who would benefit from it. You know, it sounds like it would be really useful to have a, you know, I'm getting started. And somewhere in that list is, you know, don't forget about accessibility, and have a link to really expose that. Discoverability is important. We can have the best feature in the world, but if nobody can find it, we wasted our time.
Exactly. Sometimes docs are breaking bugs, like as we ship a feature as well, but sometimes they're not.
Yeah, no, that's fair.
Depends on the team so far. Well, I feel like this has been an awesome brainstorming session, if not just being able to talk about our tools. Thank you guys so much for being on the panel.
No problem, thanks for having us.
Yeah, thanks for inviting me.
Thanks, guys.